From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 343, Post-Deployment SharePoint, with guest Eric Shupps, recorded Tuesday, October 29th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I'm here in Las Vegas. I'm at Dev Intersection and SharePoint Intersection and SQL Intersection and Angle Brackets. So we're all conjoined together and ran across Eric Shupps. Eric, for those who haven't met you before, what do you do? Where are you from?
Well, I am affectionately known in the SharePoint community as the SharePoint Cowboy. I've been around the SharePoint game for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I'm primarily an architect and developer based out of Dallas, Texas, and also spend a lot of time in the UK.
So you get around, I mean, SharePoint's big business, no two ways about it. You had a really interesting session here talking about sort of the cleanup that happens after an installation.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
Yeah. It's primarily around the issues we've been dealing with clients for the past few years around what happens after SharePoint is installed.
Right.
You've paid the consultants. They've come in. They've set everything up. Now it's turned over to you. Are you as an IT organization really prepared for what that means? How are you going to deal with that? Do you have the system in place to really treat SharePoint as a first-class application in your enterprise?
So this is more of a policy and governance concern?
Policy and governance has a lot to do with it, mm-hmm. but really focusing in on the IT group, it's about tools.
Right.
Do you have the right tooling in place to monitor and manage the environment? What do your IT policies and systems look like? Have you told the help desk that SharePoint is going in? Do they have scripts to know how to deal with that? Are you monitoring your own service delivery? Do you have service processes in place? Are you an ITIL organization, for example, or is it the wild, wild west within your IT operation? How much time do you anticipate you're going to be spending supporting SharePoint? And how much time are you really going to spend supporting it?
So I got to imagine, especially when you bring in externals to get a SharePoint installation up and running, that after that, it sort of rots. That without good care and feeding, SharePoint gets into trouble.
It can go one of two ways. Mm-hmm. It can either languish, which usually has more to do about a poor adoption strategy than anything
else. People aren't
actually
using it.
Or it just gets completely out of control.
People go berserk.
They go berserk. And you get site sprawl and stuff going on all over the place. And what typically we see happen is it falls into a pattern of you have site sprawl and every one of those sites is just another document repository.
Right.
It's just another way to do folders on a file share.
But you've created as sites rather than, so every project ends up with its own site rather than just being something a little more contained.
And which is fine if you've put thought into your taxonomy and your structure for it to be that way. But we also find that IT organizations are just completely unprepared for what SharePoint means to them from a support and maintenance perspective. Mm. They don't realize the care and feeding that has to go on the back end. They're used to responding to tickets.
Right.
Something breaks, someone calls. But SharePoint is so complex and has so many moving parts, they're not thinking about, am I really managing events? Do I know what SharePoint is doing to me? Do I know, for example, that the average SharePoint farm generates more than 5,000 critical events per day? When it's happy.
Oh, wow.
What are mine? What's going on in my organization? What's happening behind the scenes that I don't even know about?
So, I mean, and you're talking about, if I'm an ops man guy, I'm going to go plug in SharePoint and chaos will ensue, which actually is my experience with most operations manager installations is initially you're literally standing in a fire hose of messages, dialing it down to the level where the real ones are getting through is pretty hard. SharePoint's challenging for that?
Very challenging for that. And it's one of the reasons that we stepped into that space with a tool that specifically addresses that problem. What I'm really trying to do in talking about this subject is to prepare the IT folks, especially the admins and the ops personnel, for what they're dealing with and get them to think about process and how to manage that so they don't get blindsided by SharePoint when it does go crazy in their organization, because it will.
Or it'll do nothing, one or the other. I mean, I love that that's sort of the case, that people want better document management. I mean, they're generally struggling with that and are certainly associating a bunch of documents or other elements around a project. So what sort of governance are we talking about? How do you keep this in an even keel? And I'm not just talking, to me, it seems like there's an IT side of keeping the infrastructure alive. And then there is the procedural side of how do I get people to behave well?
There is. It's a multifaceted problem. Mm-hmm. It starts with planning, which most people do poorly. Mm-hmm. They don't communicate well with their user base around expectations, goals, objectives.
Well, that also means projecting that you know what's going to happen when you use this thing. And I get a sense that you just don't know.
And a lot of people don't.
Right.
I think it's certainly better now than it used to be when this was a new thing.
Right.
But there's so much. Most people now are in an upgrade phase. There's right. few customers that are just onboarding for the first time, say, to the 2013 platform. Mm-hmm. So they're at least familiar with what can happen in an organization. Right. And now it's trying to get them to do the proper planning up front. Focus on how they can manage expectations with their users, educate them. Nobody does enough training. They never think about, we have this great contents management. We're going to do records management in our organization.
Right.
Well, do your users know what a retention policy is? Do they know what a record center is? Do they know the difference between in place and submitted records? Are they prepared to fill out 20 fields in a content type every time they upload a document? Have you gone through that process?
Yeah. When they're used to not doing any of that. You make the document, and the sum total of the metadata for it is the name of the file.
That's it.
So things are a little different now.
Things are a little different.
Do you also find that organizations may go overboard on this? I mean, if you present 20 fields to a user, they're going to make stuff up. Like, that data is not actually going to be useful, much of it.
Some of it can and some of it can't. What I find, and I highlight this, is barriers without benefits. Mm-hmm. If we put a content type in front of a user who's used to just putting stuff in a file folder,
right.
and now they've got to fill out 40 fields, that's a barrier to them getting their job done.
Right.
If we don't show them the benefit of that, how we're going to use this for reporting purposes or tracking, mm-hmm. or
this actually saves you work down the line.
Exactly.
To think about these fields now.
If we don't communicate that to the user, all they see is a form with 47 fields and they don't want anything to do with
sure.
it.
Sure. So, I mean, I would also think keeping the list short, like just a little bit more metadata than you had is some progress. Or is this one of these things you've got to set once and stick to from now on?
It depends on the organization.
Mm-hmm.
If this is totally new to the users, you don't want them filling out forms with 20, 30, 40 fields.
No.
That's bad mojo.
Basically guaranteed they're going to get it wrong.
Pretty much guaranteed. Start with something simple,
mm-hmm.
and get them used to the concept. And then you can, your power users, you can give them more complex scenarios
sure.
to work with. But your average user, you can't hit them with that stuff.
I'm trying to think of more than 5 fields. Like, what all are people collecting?
I'll give you an example. This okay. is a real-life scenario. We were working with a nonprofit organization that manages a lot of property and real estate.
Okay.
And because they deal with grants and various other government institutions, mm-hmm. there's a ton of metadata that they have to track about every property, 47 fields that have to be tracked
wow.
and reported against. One poor person was dealing with filling all this stuff out
wow.
and was absolutely swamped. They needed a better process to allow. This person didn't generate the documents. She just had to make sure all the
she was
fields
filing
got filled
them,
out.
Essentially.
Pretty much.
Right.
And it all came back on her shoulders. So we built a content type that contained all of this information so that the various people who are responsible could contribute this information. The one person who we were taking this off her shoulders, thrilled,
right.
loved it,
loved
not
it.
Her problem anymore. Those other 10 people hated it.
Of course.
Because now they've got a form. They knew what all the fields are.
Right.
But they didn't want to fill out 47.
No, so much work. I didn't have to do this before. Why do I have to do it now?
Exactly. Susie had to do it. Now
right.
I have to do it. But once we showed them how you can create other lists over here that link back to a master record, right? How we can use that for reporting and workflows and the things that you need. Once we showed them the benefit,
right.
it lessened the barrier and they accepted the task up front because we showed them what it would do later. But we made the mistake of delivering it to them without showing them the benefit first.
Yeah.
Then we had to play defense.
And now you're trying to undo the hate.
Exactly.
And that takes a lot of time.
Yes, it does.
Better to get people excited and engaged on this stuff. Be part of that field selection for that matter. You know, just even though we knew it was sort of mandated to just go through it. So here are the things that we're talking about so that they get involved early on.
And that's another area where people go wrong is poor communication.
Right.
We as an IT organization get together and we drink the Kool-Aid. We get it. We know all
we're
this.
We're believing. Yeah.
The users don't. Yeah. And we don't, if you don't engage people and get their voice, when you give it to them, it's now adversarial.
Sure.
Right. Even though we're technically giving them something that make their lives better,
yes.
they don't see it that way because no. we didn't ask them up front.
Well, and I find this is a symptom of smart people in general, is we tend to work our way through to the solution before we present it to anybody. And the process of getting to the solution is arguably more important than the solution itself.
I couldn't agree with that more.
Yeah. I think it's a really interesting thing. It doesn't matter. Doesn't mean we shouldn't figure out the logical answer, but just don't presume that because you have the solution, everybody agrees or they need to see the work. Remember your math teacher drove you mental? You were able to look at the equation and go, here's the answer. And like, no, I need to see the work. And now today, you know, as a middle-aged man, I'm finding out showing the work ends up being the most important thing for actually getting engagement on these things.
It absolutely does. Well, you have kids just like I
sure.
do. And we can look, especially the young ones, we can look at their simplistic math homework, for sure. example, and go, easy.
There's the answer, yeah.
But they're struggling with the concept.
Yes.
They'll accept it if we tell them 4 + 4 = 8, but they don't understand it.
Yeah.
They can't extrapolate until they see the process. So most of the homework that we see is all about show us your work. Mm-hmm. What's the process? Show us 5 different ways to solve this problem, right? Then we'll work later on about, you know, just quick ways to get to memorization and get yeah. to the answer. But you got to understand
that,
the process.
I need to know that. Now we'll get efficient with it. But I think this sounds like a, you know, we were talking about this as post-installation, but this sounds like pre-installation too. It's like, let's have a conversation about how we're going to deal with this problem we have of managing documents and sort of lead them through the process that comes to SharePoint.
We assume because we're dealing with other adults
yeah.
that A, they have the same level of knowledge we do, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous because you and I don't understand what the HR department does.
No.
Right? So it's ridiculous for us to assume that they understand what we're doing. And we don't put enough focus on that communication and process up front. And then we got to deal with it on the back end, and then it's a problem.
Yeah. And like I said, now you're dealing from an adversarial position, so you got to sort of win them back.
Yeah.
Whereas if you've come in this earlier, it wouldn't be quite so painful.
Agreed.
So, I mean, that's just basic document storage. I mean, what are the other benefits that they're getting from this? Is this all about search, just being able to find and collect documents together?
I think we can boil it down to 2 things, mm-hmm. content and collaboration.
Right.
Content is vitally important. We've got to manage that. We've got to get better at managing it. It's our knowledge repository for mm-hmm. our organization. It, in some cases, drives our business and our profit picture. We have to get better at managing content. Right. And SharePoint gives you so much of that out of the box that it almost gives you too much
yeah.
ways to manage that content, which is a problem in and of itself. But then we've got the collaborative piece. And we, as a whole, are really struggling with is collaboration task-based the way we've had it in the past
right.
with, you know, task lists and issues lists and discussion lists and those sorts of things? Mm-hmm. Or is it interaction-based, which is all the social Yammer, you know, Facebook, Twitter, that quick hit, low content, but maybe high value communication or timely communication, which is what are we really trying to do when we're collaborating? I don't mm-hmm. know that anybody's really figured that out.
No.
Yet.
Now, I've never been thrilled with a collaboration story. And I feel like we're not really collaborating in the sense that, I mean, I appreciate that the old technique of I work on a Word document, I email it to you. You work on the Word document, you email it back to me. Clearly, we're not collaborating. We're also creating a trail of documents of different versions that we're going to mess up sooner or later. So now we move to SharePoint. And now I'm emailing you a link to a SharePoint document saying, okay, I've done my work. And then you make changes to that document and can send it back to me. I still don't feel like we're collaborating. At least not making copies of documents. I mean, tell me SharePoint does a better job of that.
Well, it does, but it requires a change in a mindset.
Hmm.
We have to talk about things like versions and check-in and check-out. And mm-hmm. now that we have Office web apps are really a first-class application rather than just a proof of concept that we had before, we now have the ability to do joint editing. I mean, the greatest thing is to be in a link session where someone has OneNote open, we're all contributing
yes.
to the... That's awesome.
Yeah, I've
that's
loved it now.
Collaboration.
Yeah, but only OneNote.
But, well, no, we can do it in Word now
okay.
as well and Excel if we're using Office web apps. So it's been a huge leap forward, but we're going to have to educate people about that. It's a different way of working.
Yeah.
You have to have that infrastructure in place. You have to have the bandwidth and the browser platform and everything to actually use that.
It's an infrastructure to make this work.
It does require infrastructure, mm-hmm. but more importantly, it requires people to work together on stuff. Mm-hmm. Whereas before we worked in isolation and then we traded isolation yes. back and forth.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And a lot of this check-in checkout process was about, I have this, you can't have it, it's mine now. And which is, you know, coming from a development world, that's very arcane source code management. Mm-hmm. You know, the modern source code management says, you want a copy, have a copy. You know, we'll only punish you at the merge.
Right.
When everybody tries to get back to the central repository, then we'll talk about who changed what and when. But I don't get the sense that we're there yet.
We're working on it.
Yeah.
It's certainly gotten better. It's leaps and bounds better than it was before. But you're asking people to change their behaviors.
Right.
The technology is fine, but getting people to change that Word document, email it to someone else, email it back to me, they still do that even with SharePoint. So it's those behavioral changes. We underestimate how difficult it is to get people to change their patterns.
Yeah, because these are productive routines they've developed, and they don't want to do. Why would I diverge from that?
A different doesn't always mean better in the user's mind.
But this still now feels like a post deployment task, because you do want them to work in the actual environment. Like, I need to have a working environment to really show them mm-hmm. collaborating. Now, I have never tried to collaborate over SharePoint that way. I have used OneNote in a board meeting kind of setting where we had the OneNote screen up on a projector and two people could simultaneously modify the document. Mm-hmm. And so you could actually see both people typing at once. Can we get beyond that? Can we start doing this? Does that make sense remotely? Or do you think it has to be everybody in the room together?
I think it makes more sense remotely.
Yeah.
But you have to have that communication aspect. It's taking us from working in our silos to working together.
Right.
Right. Which is difficult. Everybody has scheduling issues. We all are in too many meetings
sure.
and things like that. But
I would still think you'd like a speakerphone call going between us, because communicating via the keyboard seems somewhat abrupt compared to just, okay, well, let me change that. What about this? And I
tell you what we've done in the past, and I've seen some organizations do this as well, because we're an entirely remote organization. We're
right.
a small product development shop. So we don't have a conference table. Rarely are we all seated around it. We're doing things
sure.
remotely. So oftentimes when we're writing functional spec docs, mm-hmm. what we'll do is we'll have a link session. We've got OneNote open. Someone's writing their portion of the spec docs and we're commenting over in Messenger
right.
while they're doing that. And we're trading things back and forth. So we're watching what they're writing and making suggestions. It's a different way to work.
Yeah.
But we found it's very effective in fleshing out thoughts. And then if we need to talk about it, we can initiate a call.
Sure.
But we try and keep that to a minimum.
So the typing comes inefficient at some point, then go to voice.
Yeah.
Okay, and I've always been a big believer in the media change model, that at some point this is inefficient, change to another median, and if that doesn't work, you know, the ultimate progression is we go get pizza.
Right.
You know, that's the ultimate manifestation of human communication
yeah.
involves food. But I like that idea, but I also like, you know, now you're recognizing there's a driver. There's one guy contributing to the document, but he's getting real-time feedback from the other people mm-hmm. involved at the same time. Like, mm-hmm. that seems like a different collaborative model.
That's how we tend to see people who are adopting it, mm-hmm. who are doing this stuff. One person will work on a section that they've been assigned.
Right.
Other people will monitor that. Then control gets handed off to somebody else, and they work on it, and the other people come in, and it switches back and forth.
Is there curriculum around this? Like, can you take a class where you have a group of people? Do we have to? I mean, I would feel like if I want my team to actually get good at this, they have to do it. But I think I would want to put it in a non-threatening, non-deadline-based, like a sort of classroom scenario.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I don't know. You'd have to assume somebody is doing something
You'd
around
hope.
That, but it's not SharePoint training.
Yeah.
That's all task-based
yeah.
stuff.
But here we get into this sort of mentality of, we want to collaborate. It's important to us. We're putting processes in place to do that. Now we have some tooling to actually try it. You need to practice this. Like, you're never going to be good at it the first time around. And as long as we're sitting on a deadline, you know, as long as that document has to be done at a certain time, I'm not going to try a new technique. I'm going to use, as soon as that deadline gets close, like, forget this. I'm going to go work on the way I know
it's
how to work
really
to get this
good
thing
point.
Done. So I really like that idea of a sort of a tutorial model. You know, over lunch, let's experiment with a way to, or before lunch, like, let's just experiment with how we'd put together a lunch. Who wants what and so forth. It's just gathering that information and see if it's actually a better way and learn
yeah,
the tool.
You know, we often emphasize the whole lunch and learn concept as
sure.
a way to communicate with your user base. But I don't know of any of, certainly of my clients or the organizations that I know are letting their users do their own self-educating process around that.
For that team, like, I would like the idea that the team themselves finds a technique that works for them that allows them to collaborate efficiently. And because I think there's a few different techniques, you know, you've already described a few techniques here. Like, there's a few different ways to go about it. How does that team work with that?
Mm-hmm.
But I really don't think we're putting time into this. It's like, as an IT guy, once it's up and running, my job is done, guys. I got other stuff to do. I'm moving on from here. So, and then you later on go back and find that they aren't using it or they're, quote, abusing it. Like, actually getting guys into patterns that make sense, that are constructive.
We've seen in larger deployments where you have an engagement manager,
mm-hmm.
or someone who's responsible for adoption that can help drive some of that. But usually those folks come out of marketing.
Right.
You don't want those people in IT. You really want someone who's more communication focused.
Sure.
But that idea of, here's the tools. Now let's talk about how we can best use these tools in a way that's not being driven by anyone on the outside or IT that
right.
just say organically, let's figure out how to do this. That's a great concept. And I don't know if anyone's really exploiting that.
Well, I don't know if you've run across this, but I've certainly run across it in organizations. This is where SharePoint Office gets introduced in the organization in the first place, is I have a team that wants to work together and are struggling with the tools that exist today. And so somebody stands up their own SharePoint instance mm-hmm. and it's viral. And if they're actually successful and productive, then there's a heck of a lot more of it. And there's no governance at all. There's no backups at all. Like, these IT guys suddenly going, my God, my whole place is infected with SharePoint. And I've got to sort of pull this in and manage it in a way where we actually have some reliability and some backup and some InfoSec and some accountability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, untangling that mess is an interesting mess. But at least you've got engaged users at that point. The idea that we top down SharePoint, thou shalt use this for project management, go. Now that seems to me.
Those are always the most difficult implementations.
Sure.
I much prefer an organization that's trying to transition from the Wild West into some sort of, you know,
because presumably they're already feeling
society.
The pain. Yeah.
Yeah. Then I do, this is a top down implementation because, boy, then you got to try and get people to adopt, and that's difficult.
Yeah. Getting people to adopt is one thing, but actually people wanting to be reined in a little. Like, yeah, I'd actually like a sheriff in this town
mm-hmm.
that says, okay, don't do that. Like, here are the reasonable limits. I think the toughest piece here has got to be that engagement to the populace to actually want these tools and see them as valuable.
It's a definite challenge.
Yeah.
And show them how to use them.
Right. Actually take the time to get all of that going. But you can't buy it in a box, you know? So much easier when you just buy a box and off it goes. It just works.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's not that simple.
Yeah, talking to people is so much more complicated. And takes so much more time, too, in terms of actual, you know. Governance sounds so serious and unpleasant. Like, all you're going to do is produce a large document that makes people sad. Like, how do you bring governance to SharePoint in a way that people are happy to see it?
I talk about this all the time. Governance is great, but if we put too many rules and restrictions on an environment, we've taken away those critical empowerment pieces
right.
from our users. SharePoint is all about power to the people.
Yeah.
Give them the ability to do stuff on their own because, hey, IT, you're already busy. You don't want them calling you to update a website.
Yep.
Been there, done that, doesn't work.
Yeah.
We want to empower people to do their own thing. But then we turn around and say, okay, now here's a 100-page governance document about what you can and can't do
right.
in the organization. I like to approach governance from a stack of index cards.
Mm-hmm.
Here are my policies, right? We mm-hmm. are going to have an acceptable use policy. Okay, that needs to be fairly verbose because there's legal implications
yes.
for that, right?
Once the lawyers are involved, it's always long.
Yeah, so we can't really avoid that. But why does site creation and provisioning need to be a long process that required 12 stages of approval? That's, in my opinion, overboard.
If this 12 stages of approval, what you're really saying is don't ever do this.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So there's IT has a certain point in saying this infrastructure costs money.
Mm-hmm.
If everyone's spinning up these sites and putting tons of junk in there, it costs us all kinds of dollars on
right.
the back end, especially true if you're saying Office 365 or you're paying by the drink,
yeah.
right, and you don't own the infrastructure.
Which is kind of nice because trying to derive that number yourself internally is hard. And I don't know how much you do this, but actually, you know, pushing back IT costs to individual departments.
Really hard.
And the cloud makes that way simpler. These are your accounts you're paying from that come from your budget.
That can be very true, mm-hmm. But nevertheless, that needs to be managed.
Right.
Right. So I like to approach it from, let's give them some guidelines. If there's an approval process, let's make it a very simple approval, mm-hmm. right? Don't push it to IT to provision something. Make it automated.
Yes.
Any way you can.
It's got to be self-service.
Let's not get too crazy about governance. Is really, I don't want to lessen the importance of governance. It is really important, but we also don't need to go overboard. Right. You need to have basic rules and restrictions, but don't write a script of every breath you can take during the day.
Sure. And other than the legal pieces, do you buy into this idea of, isn't it better to have the problem and correct it than trying to anticipate every problem and create a rule set so strict nobody wants to do anything?
Depends on your organization. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you a topical example. The whole Edward Snowden difficulties.
Right.
Came from a admin who simply left inherited permissions turned on in a site and didn't understand the implications of what they were doing. They didn't have security auditing.
Right.
They weren't doing proper permissions management. They may have had a policy that wasn't followed.
Yes.
I don't know. What I do know happened is someone provisioned a document library that inherited permissions and gave somebody access to stuff they shouldn't have had access to.
Right.
Now, a proper governance policy can help prevent those types of scenarios. Mm-hmm. If nothing else, if you have a policy that people have been educated on, it makes them stop and think.
Right.
That doesn't mean they have to go through 20 steps to get a document library provisioned. I'm certainly not advocating that. But at least having a policy, nothing else, having a wiki page,
sure.
a tutorial that says how to create a document library, big red label, security. Here's the things you need to think about.
Right.
In that organization, it's core critical. Mm-hmm. In, say, other government contractors, you may have to worry about things like ITAR and EAR.
Right.
Those are concerning things. Financial, you've got, FSMA and all that. So in some cases, regulatory and legal means that you don't have a choice but to be a little draconian in your policy.
Governance is kind of dictated to you by the law.
Yeah. But in most organizations, that's not the case.
Right. And so, I kind of like this freedom to, same way we wanted to bring people through the problem. It's like freedom to make a mess is to understand that there is a mess to be made. And so that now there's a cost of cleaning that up, but you've also got an engagement level that folks are now, okay, yeah, I see how that's a problem. Here are a set of policies and we'll go forward from there. I think we tend to overthink these things. We start working through every kind of worst case scenario until, this is why security guys get so crazy. Like, you work through so many scenarios and you try and box stuff to the point where people don't want to even touch it anymore.
I agree with you. I'm from the same school of thought you are, which is let's give them the capability and let's clean it up where we need
to. But it does mean somebody has to be watching.
Somebody has to be watching.
Acknowledging there's a mess.
And that may not work for your organization. I get that. And I know there are some people that are way more command control and they will give you just as many reasons why you should do it their way.
Yep.
I try and take it on a case-by-case basis when I'm talking to folks and try and give them some guidelines without saying one route is better than the other.
Right. Yeah, I mean, people all have to find their own way, but certainly one of our advantages is you're out in the field, you see a lot of these projects. You've seen successes and failures. And so at least you know where the dragons are.
Which a lot of organizations, if this is new to you, they don't.
Yeah. It's not that there's one right way to be successful. There isn't. I've seen lots of people successful with lots of technology in different ways. But I've definitely seen clear failure paths. Mm. And at least you can keep them off the failure paths, they're somewhat ahead.
And that's what I try to do when I'm talking to folks is there be dragons.
Yeah.
Here they be.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, let's try and avoid those. There's lots of yellow brick roads.
Yeah. There's other choices out there.
Plenty of them. Choose what's best for you. But here are the things you really need to be concerned about.
I thought we were going to talk about post-installation, but I feel like there's a lot of pre-work here. Where do you send folks that want to get going with SharePoint and really getting your head around governance and having a good plan for SharePoint being successful in an organization?
So the good news is now there's tons of content out there.
Yeah.
Every event, conference, what have you, will have somebody talking about governance mm-hmm. and policy and procedure. That's good. And people should always look for those mm-hmm. opportunities. There's also information out there on adoption, people putting information out about various different ways to engage and whatnot. So those things are definitely out there.
Right.
I think If you want to find that information, it's there and available for you. And certain people, like people know me for talking about development and performance. And there are people who tend to talk about those type of governance topics and whatnot that you can follow. And they'll be pretty topical on those things.
Sure. And just dig around. If it starts with one, they'll find it.
And that'll lead to another and another. And eventually they'll get there.
They're ever all over the place. Eric, thanks so much for talking to me.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure as always.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.